Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And of course, if you're out there across America, why, we'd love to hear from you at our numbers 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls, because right now we have us on the line our good friend Bill Sardi. Bill is a health journalist, a health researcher. He's written a number of books on iron and certainly on many other subjects. But this evening we were going to talk about, well, this threat of biological warfare. And we keep hearing about it day after day, week after week, the threat of smallpox. I mean, here for many years, for over 20 years, we were told the government knows what's best for you. There's no need for you to take smallpox vaccine, because, of course, there's no smallpox anywhere in the world, and there's never going to be any smallpox. Oh, we have just a little bit in the laboratory, but we're just sort of keeping it there. But it's never going to get out, and there's nothing to worry about, so you can't. You can want it all you want to, but we're not going to let you be vaccinated. Then suddenly, everything changed, and oh, there's a terrible threat of smallpox, and the French have it, and the wicked Saddam Hussein has it, and probably the wicked Osama bin Laden has it, and oh, we've got to vaccinate everybody in the United States, at least all those people who don't have a definite contraindication. And we're going to start with, well, they had a special conference of experts in smallpox, and their opinion was, the only people you ought to vaccinate maybe would be a few first responders. And then, of course, if there was ever were a case of smallpox, why, you should do ring vaccination around the area of the people who came in contact with the disease. But, of course, the president, in his wisdom and with his vast medical knowledge, has decided we're going to inoculate 500,000 of our troops, 500,000 healthcare workers, and then, of course, we're going to offer this additionally voluntarily to anybody who's foolish enough, I mean anybody who wants to go ahead and take the smallpox, despite the fact that for 20 years they've been telling us there's no smallpox in the world. I really think they want to find out how stupid the American people really are. But there could be other bacteriological forms of warfare, and certainly there is certainly a possibility of something like this being cooked up. Of course, we know that the anthrax material that was used in the anthrax attack on Congress, where they were actually sending the anthrax spores to the mail, that actually came from one of our own laboratories, and it had to be somebody who was vaccinated against that specific strain of anthrax, or they themselves could have come down with the disease. So they had to somehow to get the anthrax vaccine, which is controlled tightly by our government. They had to get the militarized anthrax, which is controlled tightly by our government. And of course, that was unloosed on the East Coast. And then, well, I'm going to let Bill Sardi talk about how they sent somebody up to the tundra to dig up a dead body so that they could get one of the other diseases up there. Hi, Bill. What was that story about the Spanish flu?
Oh, yes. The flu virus of 1918, of course, it killed 40 million people, swept across the earth in about 3 months across the United States. In about 3 weeks, there were, of course, tent hospitals. Too many people were sick and not enough hospitals. Of course, it was before a time, before we had clean water. Really, we had only been chlorinating our water for a short period of time. We didn't have foods that were fortified with vitamins, so we were more subject to this kind of a problem. But, of course, somewhere out of the blue, they decided that possibly some sort of a terrorist might get hold of this, or maybe this flu virus would mutate into the form it did in 1918, and they decided to go see what it was. So they sent a U.S. Army pathologist to the tundra, the frozen ground in Alaska, where a man died of that flu virus, and they extracted the genetic sequences. Obviously, the virus is not alive anymore, but they were able to obtain the genetic sequences of that, and they now have it. It's at the Fort Detrick Army Biological Warfare Center in Maryland, and of course, this is exactly the same place the anthrax vaccine seemed to have escaped from, and that's where this is now, and oddly enough, out of the blue, researchers say that they're afraid the influenza virus might mutate and become the flu virus of 1918 once again. I certainly hope it doesn't mutate and escape from Fort Detrick Army Base. But at any rate,
why wouldn't you let a sleeping virus lie? Why would you dig it up and try to reconstitute it, such a deadly virus that killed more people in the aftermath of the First World War and then died in combat in the war? I mean, it's almost madness unless you have another agenda.
Well, what is that agenda? I mean, I think if people listen to your program long enough and hard enough, they'll begin to understand that population control is obviously one of the main issues in the world. And we just think of it as, well, there's too many people and there's not enough resources and water. It goes beyond that. It goes into, we don't have enough health care. You see, we don't really have the right financial systems. We can't deliver on all of our promises. The politicians can't. So how are they going to handle this? If some people were eliminated through disease, that's the way nature once did this, then of course it would get the politicians off the hook. So, you know, this sounds a little nefarious, a little conspiratorial, but nonetheless, we have to dig and understand the forces, why these things would occur. And why in the world would you ever be interested in vaccinating against a disease that was already eradicated? And why we're worried about the Spanish flu? And why in the world did we go dig it up out of the tundra in Alaska? So these are all crazy things, obviously crazy enough for us to investigate why. And
yeah, well, let me just comment that Bertrand Russell, in his book, The Impact of Science on Society, said that, you know, wars don't kill off enough people. There are too many people in the world, but wars don't pull off. And certainly birth control hasn't worked very well. But if we had a black plague sweep throughout the world once every generation, then people could go ahead and reproduce as much as they wanted to. That was Bertrand Russell, that great, magnificent, benevolent man who's so respected by the left today. The Impact of Science on Society, and we got the book to verify that quotation. That's exactly what he said. If a black plague could sweep through the world once in every generation, then people could reproduce as much as they wanted. After all, high-minded people are not concerned about the suffering, especially that of others, was the exact way he concluded the quotation. Anybody wants the pages, we'll be glad to provide it for them. So there really are people who see nothing wrong with mass plagues. And, of course, how are we going to get a black plague to sweep throughout the world? Pretty hard today because of the rats. We can always kill the rats and kill the fleas, but that Spanish flu that they've reconcocted and left exactly at the same place where that anthrax was, that doesn't make me feel very, very comfortable or safe, knowing that the same people are guarding that we're guarding our anthrax.
And certainly we need to understand, we do have treatments for these things. They actually found a couple of modern drugs actually would treat that mutated influenza virus, but the problem is we don't have much supply of that those drugs. There's a couple of them, and they're expensive. So it's likely that people would succumb before any of the drugs could be made in a timely fashion. So this is the kind of thing that we face. We're not prepared for it. Neither are we prepared for the side effects. This is why on my website I'm giving specific advice not to get vaccinated with the smallpox vaccine, and the reason is we are not ready to treat the side effects. If you're going to roll up your sleeve and have this done, you better be ready for the surprise. And the surprise is, if you have a side effect, they're not ready to treat it. They only have 700 doses of the immune globulin, which is what you need to treat side effects. They don't have enough for the entire population. There is a drug that can be used to treat the side effects. That drug is in short supply. It's not being stocked yet. I've written to the Centers for Disease Control. They gave me an inadequate answer. They're not prepared. Of interest to us all, the drug is called Vistide or Cidofovir. It's a drug that is made by Gilead Sciences of Foster City, California. Don Rumsfeld, who's our defense secretary, of course, was the former president of Gilead Sciences. He still holds 74,000 shares of stock in that company, and he would profit greatly if that drug was used to treat the side effects just of the men in the military. And understand, he's the one who ordered the vaccine for the men in the military. So I think that's a conflict of interest. He should resign his post. But nonetheless, this is what's happening. The drug is there. It may be helpful to people. I don't want to dismiss that. And of course, we don't have we're not prepared. We don't have stocks of it available. So this is the kind of thing that makes me say, please don't go run and get vaccinated right now. If you have a side effect, there's no way they can adequately treat it. They're not ready to do it. And the side effects can be serious and life-threatening, not just a rash or just a fever.
And what's really so interesting, of course, they get the antitoxin or whatever it is, the antibodies that can be treated this from people who have already been vaccinated with the vaccinia virus, which is the type of virus that is used in the vaccine. It's an attenuated, basically it's a sort of a modified cowpox virus. But after they've inoculated a million people, then they can get the blood from them, and then they can get more of this this antidote. So, you know, they're doing this thing as sort of in incremental steps. And have you ever thought that maybe a lot of this was so that they would have a lot of people they could bleed to get more of the product that they need?
Well, and understand, you're taking two critical populations in our society. One is our military. If you make a mistake, the entire nation has no defense.
Oh, well, we can always call in troops from Red China to maintain order here.
Yeah, and the second one is we're going to inoculate our healthcare workers. One, healthcare workers should not be receiving the vaccine like this en masse because they really can't be doing their work. They're going to have to quit work for 2 or 3 weeks, or they're going to inoculate, or that is expose other people to this. But remember, their patients are weak and, you know, do not have immunity and so on, and it may be fatal to them, and they could cross-contaminate these people and cross-infect them. And what are we going to do with healthcare workers who can't work for 2 or 3 weeks? And, see, none of this has been planned for. This is obviously poor planning. If we went along with the vaccine, fine, but I don't go along with the poor planning. So please stay away for a while till we can get this all fixed out. The government hasn't got this right yet, and it's going to be a tragic mistake for our healthcare workers because it's going to get transmitted to their families, to other people, to the patients, and it's going to be a tragedy in the making unless they can show me some better planning than what they have.
Well, let me explain what happens. When you're going to get the vaccination, you roll up your sleeve, they clean off the skin, they take and they put a drop of this live virus on your skin. The doctor takes a needle and he sort of puncts the skin about 15 times. And then, of course, they put a Band-Aid over that and you go. Now, if any of that material that's left on the skin there were to get into your eye, it would produce, a terrible thing. It could even produce blindness. If it gets onto somebody else that has an altered immune system, you have now given them a live virus because that's what was left on your skin. And it's can be there, 3 or 4 days, I suppose, and then eventually you'll form a scab, and then once the scab falls off and there's no more virus there, then you're no longer contagious. But if you're a healthcare worker and, of course, any of the material from your arm were to get onto a patient with an altered immune system, they could come down with a fulminant vaccinia infection that could kill them. And, of course, why would they want to take healthcare workers and do that, when the panel of experts that the government put together said there's no justification for, a generalized, immunization. Maybe the people in the emergency room, but they're not 500,000 people working in the emergency room.
I certainly wouldn't be vaccinated for something with these serious side effects. That's the reason why we gave up vaccination in the first place, was the terrible side effects of this. And,
but there's no evidence there's any disease in the
correct.
World.
Correct. There's no threat. And modern medicine's first rule is do no harm. Now, we're going to do harm before we provide any benefit here. So this is really contrary to anything in ethics of modern medicine.
And why is the president Why is the president, with absolutely no medical training, overruling the panel that was impaneled by the Centers for Disease Control? When did we start making political decisions about health care rather than medical decisions? And you must understand, that's why we're in so much trouble with the AIDS epidemic. Doctors know how to stop the AIDS epidemic. We were never allowed to, and almost 27 million people are dead so far, and another 35, 38 million people infected and will die because the politicians controlled the handling of the disease. How many people are going to die because there may be a threat? There may be a threat of smallpox, and we're going to war because there may be weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And the problem is so many Americans are willing to take the smallpox vaccine because there might be a threat. So many Americans are willing to go to war because there might be weapons. You would think that we would want to know before we left.
Well, if there is a threat, then why aren't the Canadians rolling up their sleeves? Why aren't the British? Why aren't the Germans? There's no threat to them. I realize we're the target for terrorists, but this still does not explain why the president orders this for us and the rest of the country sit by and watch. What's going on? There's something wrong here. Our public should be asking more questions. Certainly, I would want more planning and more assurance that they could handle the side effects here. By the way, I expect some social pressure now to get all this to happen because they'll get the healthcare workers, and sooner or later they'll be at senior centers and all this and asking people to sign up. So a lot of social pressure to get vaccinated. And understand, if you're an older person, your immune system is not what it used to be. You could be very vulnerable here. If you have skin conditions, atopic dermatitis and eczema and so on, any of those conditions, if you're a diabetic, if you're pregnant, very small children, all kinds of people on certain medications, you simply need to walk away from any idea of ever getting vaccinated. Go to your doctor, get advice, get an exemption. Please stay away. This could be mortal to you. So there's no threat. The Los Angeles Times running a story today saying the threat of a smallpox terrorist attack is remote. It's almost impossible to undertake. The people themselves, if they were infected, if a terrorist was infected, he could only be a smallpox terrorist for a day before he had, you know, the evidence of it out on his skin and other places. He'd be very sick, and he couldn't walk around and infect everyone else. So it just wouldn't happen. It's not going to happen. It's a remote deal. You can't make a smallpox bomb. It really it's not practical. It wouldn't work. So it's all in the Los Angeles Times. They're trying to explain it to you. There's no reason to panic or get worried or roll up your sleeves. Believe me, don't do it.
But the government is doing everything they can with planted articles in papers and magazines and television and radio to frighten us to death to go along with something that for years they told us didn't even exist. So suddenly the official party line has changed. Before there was no threat, now there's a terrible threat. Everybody's got to be ready to get vaccinated, and we're going to start vaccinating right now. And there's still never been a case of smallpox in the world. You know, never underestimate the gullibility of the American people.
Well, our country had smallpox before. We didn't do any of this mass vaccination, and we withstood the infections, and they were multiple in more than one location at a time. This is all nonsense. We withstood this without these kind of crazy measures before, and we don't need to do it today.
Well, let's imagine, though, that flu bug that we dug up and we've reconstituted, and now, of course, it's being guarded by the same people who guarded the anthrax that recently killed the people on the East Coast. Let's imagine that flu bug was released. Of course, it just happened to escape. Maybe they left a window open or something. But let's imagine we did have a major epidemic of lethal proportions, not smallpox, because I don't think it's really a problem, but that flu is highly contagious. In fact, there have been a number of people who have died over in Uganda recently in that same area where we have repeatedly in the past used experimental medications, introduced it as the AIDS epidemic started largely there, as the Ebola epidemic started largely there. So there's been a new flu epidemic not too far away from some of where our experimental labs are, and a number of people died. But let's just imagine that this should break out all across the world. What can people do to increase their immunity? Because this is the big thing. You want to have the maximum immunity so that you don't get one of these diseases or even the flu blood going around now that really is very incapacitating.
You bet. And, you know, I know people hear everything from colloidal silver to take mushrooms to beta-glucan, all kinds of things. And some of these things are good, actually, that mushrooms wouldn't be so bad and so on. But for the majority of us, we need to use what nature provided us in essential nutrients. That's vitamins and minerals. We take them in supplement form in order to get this to occur. The flu virus cannot mutate and become mutant type that we're worried about. If you have enough selenium in your system, selenium, a little trace mineral, you'll want to get 200 micrograms in a multivitamin or a food supplement. Just 200 micrograms of selenium. Zinc elevates the immune system about 15 to 25 milligrams. Vitamin C, maybe 300 to 500 milligrams, and vitamin E, probably a couple of hundred units. All of those that I just mentioned have been used in studies in the medical literature to boost immunity, and in particular, before people received inoculations or vaccinations, because you have to have an intact immune system for vaccines to work. They have to make antigens. So sometimes
I have to make antibodies.
Yeah, excuse me, antibodies. So
you don't want to make it antigens.
I'm sorry. So you get talking here so fast, you try and deliver the information, you're not thinking. So as you have the antibodies, you of course, that's how they know that the vaccine took, you know. So this is what you need to do. You need to get the vitamin C and E, the selenium and the zinc. These are economical, inexpensive ways for you to boost your immune system. So, and by the way, the flu season is coming anyway. I don't know how lethal the flu will be this year, but regardless of that, we need to have a good immune system. Work on the basics. Don't let people just give you a sales pitch. Work on something that's simple, inexpensive, and it's not so exotic, and you know that it'll work in your system. And it works in children and so on, so you can do these things universally.
All right, fine. Now, there are other things that you can take as well, actually, to boost your immunity. What about echinacea? Is echinacea beneficial?
Echinacea is wonderful. It's the number one herb sold in the United States. It works in two ways. It both boosts the immune system as well as boosts the barrier system against disease, because it preserves the barriers in your body so that as germs begin to grow, they can't make it across these barriers, and it keeps them minimized so that they don't get to and destroy all the tissues in your body. So echinacea is wonderful, especially for a time. Maybe not so good every day in the sense that you should be taking it when you start to feel ill and then use it, but it certainly is helpful and has been proven to be effective.
All right, and what about the garlic preparation we've talked about?
Okay, now garlic's wonderful, and we can take that both therapeutically and preventively. That is, if we want to prevent viruses and any really any type of infection, a little garlic, fresh garlic, is where we'll start our discussion because that's where it works. If you crush the garlic, you make a substance called allicin. Crushing it will make 6,000 micrograms. Blending it will make 12,000 micrograms of allicin from an average 4-gram size of a clove of garlic. So that's good for you to keep around, keep the fresh garlic around. For those of you who can't handle the garlic, don't like the odor and all that, the garlic pills down at the store don't work. They pretend, or what they have, allicin potential. There's a new garlic pill here from Britain. I tell everybody about it, called Allimex. It's the first stabilized allicin in a garlic pill. It's available. We can look for it. It was announced in the British press a year ago. It's been published in a study. In the winter months, the allicin capsule, just one of these little allicin pills, Allimex pills a day, reduced the risk of the common cold in the winter months by over 50%. Of the people who did get sick and were taking the Allimex pills, they only were sick and had symptoms for a day and a half versus 5 days for the people that weren't taking it. So it's been proven in a clinical study. It works against viruses. And by the way, we'll be talking about viruses with smallpox. It's active against vaccinia, has been used in a test. Vaccinia is the little cowpox bug they use. That's what they're giving you when they give you the vaccine. So this could be a wonderful at-home antidote. I didn't say it replaced modern medicine or doctors or any of these things. We're just trying to tell you that if you can find a way to get allicin, the active substance in fresh garlic, you will have something that kills all bacteria, viruses, funguses, protozoas, amoebas, every known pathogen, and it does not develop drug resistance. By the way, the British Medical Journal announcing today that the infections, the drug-resistant infections are going way up. We're having a tremendous outbreak of infections in hospitals in particular, but lethal infections that we can no longer treat with antibiotics. We're going to have to rely on the nature's antibiotics, the ones like the one from garlic, allicin. You can use it fresh, that's inexpensive, or you can look into getting this new Allimex pill, which is just available here in the United States.
Is there a telephone number where people can get more information about the product?
There is. The manufacturer has given us a number that's a toll-free if people just want the information. That's 866-405-4000. They can contact. That's the British company. 866-405-4000. That's a toll-free number to find out about Allimex. Now, a lot of people have been asking me about should they get vaccinated or about the garlic, the Allimex pills, and they can go to my website, which is askbillsardi.com, and you can then tap into all the reports and access all the things that you need to do there. Askbillsardi.com.
Well, I was really very interested to hear that the garlic will actually decrease the cholesterol and the blood sugar and the blood pressure. Is that true?
Well, all of this has actually been proven. It's the allicin that is the active ingredient that has been shown to do this. And it's remarkable when you think about it, that one molecule made in nature, God made this wonderful little molecule called allicin, and it really has something. It's a very penetrating molecule. That's why we can sense it coming through our skin and the odor, and it'll penetrate into all the tissues of the body quite rapidly. In fact, someone has said if you just get a little garlic clove and crush it and stick it in your shoe, you'll be tasting garlic on your tongue within about a half an hour. So it really travels through the body. It's able to penetrate. And that little substance in clinical studies has been shown to lower blood pressure, lower cholesterol, lower your blood sugar levels and control those, your insulin demand. So all of these wonderful things. By the way, allicin selectively kills cancer cells and leaves healthy cells alone. And, of course, we're just now, the Journal of Nutrition and Cancer has been unveiling the method by which nature does that with allicin. But it's not just garlic. It's the allicin component in it. You have to either use fresh crushed garlic or use this new Allimex pill to get it. The Allimex pill is non-odorous, and it's portable, so it might be convenient for some people who want to look into that.
Well, now, of course, they're actually had meetings of the FDA on garlic and its effectiveness, and, of course, they were a little discouraged because although they acknowledged that garlic was very useful, so many of the pills weren't?
That's correct. They had a government meeting on this because the products that are out there are improperly labeled today. Some of them say they have allicin. I know I'm going to get phone calls. But the one I have in my hand says allicin. I know it says that, but it doesn't have any in it, and the government is going to change the rules and make sure these companies just can't use that indiscriminately. What they're trying to do is take the enzyme that creates allicin and the other component that it works activates and then put those together in a pill and then hope it all happens in your stomach. But stomach acid actually destroys the enzyme that makes allicin. So they have to make the pills open up further down in the upper intestines, actually, not rather than the stomach. And they can't quite make the pills right, so most of the time they just pass too far along. Actually, they're out of your system before they open up, so they don't work.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Bill Sardi. We'll welcome your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're dependent on those of you who listen to our programs on a regular basis to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day with the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And, of course, certainly we are 5 hours on radio and in the Internet, 3 hours on satellite, 2 hours on the on the shortwave. And by so doing, we actually have the opportunity to reach not only people here in the United States, but people throughout the world. And we're small compared with many of the ministries out there. Certainly, Rush Limbaugh's got, about 600 stations that people listen to him every day. We've got about 50 stations. People listen to him many times, just once a week. But at least we're a voice. And when you join the Radio Liberty family, why, you become part of that voice. And the reason we don't have 600 stations is because we're going to tell you what Rush Limbaugh will not tell you. Rush Limbaugh will attack anybody who dares to call him and suggest that there is a move towards a new world order, or that the force behind this whole movement towards the new world order is Luciferian. He's not going to let you say that on his programs, and that's why he has 600 stations, and we probably never will. He gets his programs for nothing. He gets paid for doing his programs. We have to pay for our radio time. But at least we have a voice. And if you believe we're involved in a spiritual battle, being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, why, we would love to have you join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And it's simply a matter of giving us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Now, if you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters, our September newsletter explained really what happened on September 11th. Our October newsletter is the testimony of Kristen Breitweiser, who his husband, Ron Breitweiser, died in the South Tower of the World Trade Center on September 11th. But her testimony before the House Select Committee on the 18th of October of this year really was one of the clearest presentation of the facts. You know, what they do is they give us so much information and it's so confusing and contradictory, you just can't figure out what's really going on, and they bury you with information and verbiage. And Kristen, representing the families of the people who perished there, the families of September 11th, the survivors of September 11th, have actually laid it out very well. And although the television cameras were grinding, the reporters were there writing down what was said, but very little of that got into the media. And so we've simply reproduced her testimony for our October newsletter. If you'd like a free copy of that newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Please go to our website. That's RadioLiberty.com. RadioLiberty.com, and you'll find our newsletters. We welcome you to pull those down and copy them and get them out for people. We ask you, of course, to listen to our archive radio programs. You're welcome to copy those, listen to our live programs, either on Radio Liberty, my network, or on the American Freedom Network or the Genesis Network. And, of course, go to those sites, and then, of course, please tell others about our website. Tell them about our radio programs on the Internet, on shortwave, on satellite, and on regular radio stations across America. And join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation, or any nation conceived under God, can long endure. We'll be back in just a moment with our good friend Bill Sardi, and our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and right now we've been talking about the vaccination. One of the nice, interesting things about what I do is I get a chance to talk to a lot of people, try to bring as many as we can onto our radio programs. Some of them will come on, most of them will. Occasionally we'll run into somebody who won't, and one of the people who would talk to me off the air but not come on the program was a man named Kenneth Alabek. That's not his real name, it's a Russian name. He was the number two man in the Soviet Communist Biological Warfare Unit. And, of course, he was working on all these horrible diseases they were planning on unleashing on us. And, of course, he eventually defected to the United States, went to work for an organization which I suspect has some CIA ties. I can't prove that, but certainly everything would point in that direction. And he, of course, is very frequently quoted on radio and television and articles. He wrote a book called Biohazard, talking about the threat of biological warfare. But when I talked to him, he mentioned that, of course, because he was working on all of these terrible diseases, he had to be vaccinated to protect himself from getting the diseases. that he had been vaccinated against 56 different diseases, and he said, "I am allergic to everything. You can't give people that many vaccines or you'll just destroy their immune system and you'll kill them." He said, "I'm allergic to everything, everything possible, just because I've had so many vaccines." And he's really being very honest. He's saying what everybody out there should realize, now we're giving too many vaccines. There's a natural way to give people immunity, and that's to contract the disease. And when you have a good immune system, why, you can fight off most diseases. And what people don't understand is that at the beginning of the 20th century, the death toll from disease was very, very high because, of course, we did not have the immunity. Our bodies didn't have the fortified minerals and vitamins and all of these things that were subsequently added to our food. But by the time the 1940s came around, they started vaccines. The death toll from all these diseases had fallen dramatically. And by the time they introduced the measles vaccine, there were 44 people that died in the entire country that year. And, of course, if they were doing tests now on people here in the United States, we would find that there probably would be little need for most vaccines. Certainly the polio vaccine did a magnificent job. The only trouble is they didn't test it ahead of time. And what happened was the initial polio vacine, there was live poliovirus, and I think 100 and almost 200 people got paralyzed. A number of them died. Then, of course, they got the live poliovirus out, but they forgot and left a cancer virus in and contaminated some 96 million Americans with SV40, a disease that produces mesothelioma, which is never seen, almost never seen before, before the polio vaccine. And then they changed from the rhesus monkey to the green monkey because the green monkey didn't have SV40. And then, of course, they gave us the monkey cytomegalic viruses that the green monkey had. And these, at least according to Dr. John Martin, produce a progressive neurological diseases in many people. And, of course, the trouble is that they get these vaccines and they don't test them thoroughly and they want to vaccinate the entire population. And that's what they're talking about with this smallpox vaccine. They're using an entirely new vaccine, and not grown as it was traditionally before from the calves. This is grown in human fetal tissue. What viruses are there? What are the complications 10 years down the line? Nobody knows. And you're taking an experimental vaccine when you're, of course, you're immunized with this new vaccine because we don't know what the long-term result of it is. And, of course, they've got the laws written, so you can't possibly sue anybody. In other words, the manufacturers are immune. Why? Because they wouldn't put this product out if they could be sued. Well, if there's nothing to worry about, why are they worried about getting sued? And they are worried about getting sued because they don't know what the long-term result is, and they're experimenting on the American people. We've got John calling from Idaho. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Hi, Doctor. Hi, Bill Sardi. I wanted to ask you, I noticed on your site that you take the flaxseed supplement and the cod liver oil on alternate days. I'm being a fan of the research on the carcinoids of Dr. Barry Sears. He recommends that with the flax that you might want to go easy on it because it's like biological aspirin. Is that why you do that?
Well, what happens is for people that are interested, by the way, if you want to raise your immunity, fish oil and flax oil, another way to mildly do it. It doesn't work as fast as some of these other things, but you certainly need it. These are essential oils for your nervous system and so on to handle inflammatory response. But fish oil is different from flaxseed oil. Flaxseed oil has lignans in it, and lignans are good to protect our fatty tissues. They're what we call phytoestrogens or plant-like estrogens, and they're good to protect our breast and prostate tissue and other areas of our body. So I take flaxseed oil one day. The next day, I'm going to take fish oil. Well, why fish oil? Because fish oil has done a wonderful thing and already gone through the fish's liver, and the fish's liver then converts it to something called EPA and DHA. I won't go into what those words mean, but they simply means it's converted it into a form your nervous system can use. And, of course, some people don't have a really great working liver, and I take the pressure off my liver by letting the fish's liver has already done the job, and then this stuff can get right up to my nervous system and work. So one day it's fish oil, and the next day it's flax. I like both, so.
Yeah, exactly. What you're saying, isn't it true that flax has an unnaturally high level of alpha-linolenic acid, whereas fish oil is more, well, the EPA, Dr. Sears, I think, recommends something like a 50-to-1 ratio EPA to ALA, and it's very interesting because most of the supplements you see are very heavily tilted towards the ALA, which is, it's fine. I mean, it suppresses inflammation, but it also suppresses good EFA synthesis, the desirable EFA synthesis as well.
Well, some of this is overdone. Flax is really wonderful. It's just a marvelous substance, and flax oil, Barleen's a wonderful company.
That's the kind I take, too.
One of the best brands that I found. But, you know, and it's pure. I've been to the places where they make it, and it's really wonderful. And the health benefits of these things are really fabulous. You know, so if you look at some of the history of this, so... I strongly recommend flaxseed oil and fish oil, and the benefits are, we're a little puzzled because these are essential oils, and yet we don't see, the government has not, health authorities have not declared these oils as essential, and yet we know they're essential for health. You won't see it printed as a recommended daily allowance or anything on any vitamin pill bottle. So, but we need them where 80% of us are deficient in them, and we're going to find that there'd be a lot less disease. Where they found this out first was the Eskimos in Greenland, and they were almost free of every disease, diabetes, heart disease, cancer, and everything. And they had a very high intake of these oils, or fats, we call them. And, of course, that's kind of hard for us to fathom, somebody having that much fat in their diet and still being free of disease. Because they're essential, they're what the body recognizes, and of course, we should get them. The plant variety is for vegetarians, or obviously when you can't get the fish, and it's a renewable source, easily renewable. It's very interesting that many of the nervous disorders in the world, multiple sclerosis, many eye disorders and retinal problems, exist in inland areas away from where you can get cold water fish that are rich in omega-3s. And the omega-3 oils are in the fish oils. And by the way, what is omega-3 oil? But nothing but the antifreeze for the fish. You see, their blood would just freeze in the very cold northern waters, like up by Norway and so on. But you see, it keeps it from freezing. It's an antifreeze. Actually, take your fish or flaxseed oil, stick it in the freezer, and you'll see it won't freeze. So it's good for your circulation then, because it's going to keep your circulation going. It's the antifreeze for your circulatory system.
If it's a quality product, it won't freeze.
Sure. Yeah.
Anything else, John?
I'll just add very quickly to this very brief discussion. It's a wonderful, fascinating topic, and I wish we could go on and on about it. But people ought not to use those in culinary use. They should not fry with those. Those are supplements, and they should be kept cold and dark. And use your refractory oils if you insist on eating. I don't eat any fried food at all, but if you're going to insist on frying, use some sort of refractory oil. Don't
you? Most of the manufacturers put those in dark bottles, and it is a good idea. Store those things in the refrigerator.
The people that fry with those, they're going to make free radicals, which are going to hurt
your immunity.
Oh, no.
These aren't cooking oils by any means. No,
yeah.
They're nutritious oils, but not cooking ones.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you.
Fine. Thanks very much, John. And that was John calling in from Idaho. And if you're out there and you'd like to talk to Bill, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And Bill has done a wonderful job of compiling all of this information. I think you'll find it fascinating. And, of course, his website, AskBillSardi.com. That's AskBillSardi.com, and of course he has his email address will be there. And if you want to get more information on how to reach him, that's how you do it. And he's I know he's talked to a lot of our people who've called us. We've referred to him, and really he's been able to help many of them. Well, right now we have a Theodora calling, and I bet that's Theodora from Santa Cruz. Hi, Theodora.
Hi, Dr. Stan, and hi, Bill Sardi. I want to let you know, Bill, I was on your website today, and that's not easy. I go to the library to do that, so it's worth going.
Good, thank you.
And, you know, Dr. Stan, you're talking about the push towards these mandatory smallpox vaccinations.
Right.
And a piece of good news I caught on one of the, leftist radio stations. And just to let you know,
you listen to those leftist radio stations?
Yes, I do, because everybody's got a piece of the truth, and the more we share it, the bigger picture we all have.
Right. What did you hear?
Well, that the health workers' unions are resisting.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Yeah, and exactly, because those are the real front lines, because those are the workers they want to go to first, and their unions are saying no.
Well, they had a physician on CNN this morning, Dr. Gupta, who writes also on the Internet, and they were asking him, and he said, nope, not for me, and I couldn't believe it.
It's happening.
And he was on national television telling you, no, don't get it.
Well, they're trying to stampede us and frighten us to death to get us to do this, Theodora. And you can just see this whole coordinated attack day after day after day, article after article after article after article. You know, and they've got the American people so frightened, and somebody has to stand up and say, look, the government put together a panel of experts, and they said, don't do this.
And if we share the information, you know, because people on the left have a piece of the information, people on the right have a piece, people in the middle have a piece, and when we share it, we realize, hey, you know, we the people are saying no, and the people at the top are trying to shove it down our throats, but each in our own way. I mean, I'm really encouraged. Kissinger was forced to resign. That's to be celebrated. But I do have some questions.
Okay, go ahead.
For Mr. Sardi in person. Two questions. One is about hemp oil, whether that's something you've looked into.
Well, hemp oil, you know, it's very interesting. Hemp oil is a whole industry, both for hemp as a fabric. It makes wonderful cloth. And hemp oil, of course, has some wonderful benefits. But it doesn't have a lot of the real essential oils like we find in flaxseed oil or fish oil. So those would supersede hemp oil. But hemp oil has many wonderful other benefits and probably does alter and help the immune system a little bit. But I wouldn't put it at the top of my list here.
In reading the literature, we're told that the hemp oil actually has a better ratio of the omega-6, omega-3.
It may have a better ratio, but it has very little in volume. That's the point.
Uh-huh.
See,
okay.
But it does have a good ratio,
uh-huh.
And it will boost your immune system, and it is something very beneficial.
Uh-huh.
And I think the people that are selling it have a really wonderful little product. And we need these essential oils into our system. So you'll find the greatest concentration of omega-3s, which is what we're really weak in, in flax. There's nothing that beats flax. But, the hemp oil is going to be added to the list and without reticence, because people worry about hemp and all this. It has nothing to do with marijuana or anything. It's just the oil.
Now tell me, Theodore, is hemp oil available in this country?
Oh, very much so.
All right, fine.
It from Canada right now, but you can go into any health food store that sells essential oils, and you'll see right next to the flaxseed oil, you'll see some hemp oil products.
You know, the absurdity of this, the fact that the CIA, the biggest dispenser of drugs anywhere in the world, and you can even go into Gary Webb's website, and then he'll link you to the CIA, where they'll admit that the CIA Inspector General admitted that high government officials in the CIA were dealing in drugs. And yet, of course, they're going to make hemp, illegal, or and marijuana illegal. I mean, I don't think that people ought to be using these myself, you know. But if they want to use hemp for material, if they want to use hemp oil, that's fine. Where does it get off any place that the federal government has a right to restrict what people do? If states want to restrict the use of drugs or marijuana, that's fine. But there is no place in the Constitution the federal government has the right to restrict people's use of medications. If people want to use them, that's a state issue. It is not a federal issue. And, of course, the real reason that the federal government has made such a big issue out of the drugs, they don't want any competition for the CIA.
Well, they know how to work all angles.
They sure do, and how to turn American against American.
One of the pieces that really helped make sense to me around all of this prohibition, whether it was alcohol or marijuana, is that the original prohibition on alcohol was not driven by women, you know, women who had drunk husbands who were tired of it all. That's what got the press. It was driven by the desire of the petrochemical oil upcoming industry to prohibit the alcohol fuel industry. And if you prohibited alcohol, you prohibited alcohol fuels. And that you know, those folks we are up against in all realms of our existence know how to, you know, work, you know, every end against the middle. You know,
well, you know, it is interesting that we try to encourage people in other lands that are growing some of these plants that become illicit drugs, street drugs. We try to interest them in getting in some other industry so they could make a living. And yet hemp itself, which we get marijuana from, actually can be made into these essential oils. It can be made into a wonderful fabric, rope, and many other things. So there's some wonderful products that can be made
exactly.
from hemp, and we should encourage that.
Well, one of the products that actually was being produced by hemp was cannabis fuels, and they were going to be equally competitive with the petrochemical fuels, but we were not allowed to move in that direction. And that's really what's, you know, it's that control of our energy resources, our food resources, and our medical resources, which is why I appreciate you, Mr. Sardi, because you give us medical resources that we can find in our supermarket, in our gardens.
Yeah, well, now, understand, marijuana was actually probably the best treatment we've ever found for glaucoma. It is a wonderful treatment for pain for cancer patients. But please don't let that be an excuse to run out and excuse whatever habit you've developed over the years. It'll stunt emotional growth in children as they get in school. It'll mess up your immune system. It fools around with your brain so that you lose short-term memory over time. So if you're one of those people just recreationally use it, I guess you get away with it. But I am telling you there are side effects, so be careful there.
And that's true of anything we use, and that's
yeah.
really what we, you know, to pay attention to everything you put in your body and do it wisely. But it's better to err with the plants that grow on the earth rather than the stuff that comes out of the laboratories.
Right, you bet.
So, but thank you again for sharing
uh-huh.
your wisdom about how we can heal ourselves without depending on what comes out of the laboratory.
Well, we can do it pretty inexpensively, too. A few garlic cloves, a few vitamins. For those of us who, you know, like it already prepared, why there's products to do that, too. But those are simple things to do.
Are you familiar with the Weston A. Price?
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. If you care to speak about that, please do. I'm very interested in their work, and it seems like it parallels some of
Yeah, the Weston Price Foundation was established by a man who found, he did a lot of work with cats and nutrition. He also went overseas, and of course he found that many of the third world countries had better diets and better health, and of course some of that is true. So, and people may want to become familiar with that organization over time, though I do find their information quite outdated today.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you both.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye, Theodora. And, of course, that was Theodora from Santa Cruz here, and one of our favorite liberals. And a very nice lady, and certainly searching for the truth, as we should all be. In fact, I like to consider myself a liberal, too. After all, a liberal wants to limit the power of government and wants people to be free. And that, unfortunately, they've got the terminology so confused now that the old conservative used to be a liberal, and the liberals used to be conservatives. And I have always been a liberal. I was born a liberal. And yet, of course, the traditional liberal wanted to limit the power of government and limit the authority of the politicians. How far we've gotten away from that today, with people like Al Gore being considered a liberal. And, of course, he wants total control and regulation over every aspect of what's going on. But it appears right now both political parties are moving in exactly the same direction. Now we've got the Republicans trying to figure out how we're going to get socialized medicine to correct the problems that the government has itself created that. And, of course, working in concert with the drug companies who have boosted the prices here in the United States up to obscene levels, and of course are using the patent laws to prevent the generic drugs being created in many instances, and they want to create a crisis so they can come up with a solution. And that solution will ultimately mean rationing of health care to everybody in the name of solving the problem. And there is no problem facing American medicine today that another government program won't make worse. Well, I guess it's Bill Sardi, and Bill, now you've written a couple of other books, haven't you, as well?
I've written some wonderful books, How to Find the World's Best Drinking Water, my latest book, How to Live 100 Years Without Growing Old. I've written a book, The Iron Time Bomb, and how iron accumulates in the human body and accelerates aging. And I've written a book on multivitamins. All those books you can find, go to my website, askbillsardi.com, but I'm not letting you go there until you support Radio Liberty, just like I do, and I encourage everyone else to. And, of course, we love participating here, giving away free information. My website is free of commercial interest, so you'll enjoy going there, but please support Radio Liberty. We enjoy it just as much as you do, and we enjoy participating in it. But I'll tell you, there's a monthly check that goes to support Radio Liberty from our household. We hope there is from yours, too, because we got to get this word out to other people. And, of course, we know that it is going out, and a lot of people are listening. So that's what I enjoy participating in.
I appreciate that very much. We've got Ron calling from Washington. We're just about out of time. Ron, did you have a quick question?
Yes, about a book called The Hot Zone. It was about the Ebola virus. Is that accurate?
Pretty much it is, and the Ebola virus, again, get some selenium. You'll never get Ebola, so don't worry about it. It occurs in selenium-poor areas of the world.
And the other thing is, Ron, the first initial outbreaks of this did not occur in Africa. It occurred actually among monkeys that had been sent to a place called Marburg in Germany, very, very similar virus. And, of course, those monkeys would be used to create the polio virus a polio vaccine they were going to send back to Africa. Fortunately, they isolated the monkeys before they killed them, and they started to die, and then, of course, all the keepers started to die, and a number of people died. And the only outbreak we ever had here in the United States just happened to be in laboratory monkeys here in the United States. Isn't it strange that this disease seems to originate in laboratory monkeys? We're out of time. We'll cover that some other evening. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate so much your being with us. And
you bet.
We're going to have to say goodbye to you, and then we're going to have to say goodbye to our listeners up there in the Great Northwest. And, of course, we'll be back with you again on Monday. And we just want to ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival. Because if we don't turn back to God, why, God is going to turn his back on America forever. Well, then we ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for my family and my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until Monday, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for a few minutes. We have with us on the line David Sibley of Ready Reserve Foods, and we're going to be talking about the times that lie ahead and what are the implications of our going to war with Iraq. Now, of course, we're told this is a just war. Of course, you have to say it's a just war. How could you tell the American people this was an unjust war? And, of course, we are justifying this on the fact that we know that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. How do we know that? Well, of course, we gave him the biological and chemical elements back in the 1980s. And if you doubt that, why we have a book written by Seymour Hersh. It's called Against All Enemies, and it documents this going back. He wrote the book in the mid-1990s, and yes, we had given Saddam Hussein biological and chemical warfare agents to develop. So why should we be surprised that he has biological and chemical warfare agents? Now, does he have nuclear weapons? Well, we know he has nuclear weapons. How do we know he has nuclear weapons? Well, we're not going to tell anybody because we don't want Saddam Hussein to know how we know he has nuclear weapons, but we want to assure you that this is going to be a just war. Not only that, we want to assure you that we know Osama bin Laden was behind the attack on the World Trade Center. We have all the evidence, but we don't want you to, we're not going to tell you that evidence, not going to tell anybody about our evidence, because we don't want Osama bin Laden to know how we knew he was behind the attack on the World Trade Center. Not that Osama bin Laden opposed the attack on the World Trade Center. I'm sure he did not. I'm sure that he probably found out about it several days before the attack, and he was very, very pleased to hear about the attack. Osama bin Laden hates the United States. But now, of course, we find it was a couple of other people in Al-Qaeda that were really behind this, but we had to have Osama bin Laden blamed for the attack because, of course, how else could we justify going to war with Afghanistan so we could get the oil line across Afghanistan? And, of course, everybody has simply forgotten that Osama bin Laden had worked with the CIA all during the Afghan War. And after the Afghan War, we had opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to take him. In fact, in 1996, the Sudanese government were ready to turn Osama bin Laden over to the Clinton administration, and they refused to take him. And now Bill Clinton says, gee, oh, shucks, that was a terrible mistake. Well, it was a mistake, or has Osama bin Laden created the best enemy that the CIA could buy? Because there are many, many people who believe that, whether knowingly or unknowingly, the CIA helped Osama bin Laden at every turn. You go into the background of how he came to lead this whole Islamic movement. There were actually two people above him in the hierarchy of Islam. One was a man named Azam, who had actually been Osama bin Laden's mentor during the 1980s. Azam, who we allowed to come here in 1988 to set up terrorist training schools and to disseminate terrorism, to raise funds for the Islamic terrorist movement. And in that wonderful video that was put out by Stephen Emerson, you can actually see Azam going at the meetings talking about how we had to have jihad and right here in America. But, of course, Azam was killed in 1989, presumably with Osama bin Laden's permission or support. And then the other man was a man named Mr. Rahman, the blind sheikh. And, of course, he was working with the CIA in Egypt. He was advocating terrorism, arrested repeatedly by the Egyptian government, always released under very strange circumstances, suggested the hand of the CIA. The CIA gets him to come into the United States. And then, of course, he is arrested and put in prison, incommunicado, apparently associated with some plans that were actually put forward by an agent provocateur provided by the CIA. Well, that's neither here nor there. Right now, we want to talk about the threat that we have on the right facing us today, and that is the possibility that associated with what's going on we might have a chemical or biological or a nuclear attack on the United States. And our leaders are telling us it's not a matter of when we have the, or if we're going to have an attack, but it's a matter of when we're going to have an attack. And yet, of course, they're not out there telling the American people to become prepared that in case we did have an attack of this sort, that the people would be prepared to look after themselves if there was a breakdown of the infrastructure of our society. And so that's why I've asked David to come onto the line, just to talk about how people could prepare and what they should do now. A lot of us, I'm 74, I'm not going to pick up and be able to move to another area, but I think that everybody should at least begin making preparations how they would survive if suddenly our supplies of food and water and warmth and electricity were cut off for a matter of a day, a week, several weeks. David, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing just fine. And of course, I know you've been contemplating these things for quite some time, so why don't you share some of your thoughts with our listeners, and certainly young people like yourself could probably, you know, relocate to a different area, but for this old folks and for so many people in the, you know, in the inner city or in an area such as we are where there's just no question you can, we hopefully wouldn't have to relocate. Santa Cruz is certainly not not an area that probably would be the a center of an attack, although certainly the inner city of San Francisco and Los Angeles would be. But what should people start doing to prepare so that they could survive?
Look at your day-to-day needs. Your needs, not wants, but needs. You need food, water, warmth, shelter. You've got the shelter. Everybody should be listening in a home this evening. The water is brought to you from somewhere else. That's probably your most important item. Without water, you won't last but a few days. Start storing water. Come up with another way to store water. Should something bad happen, you have water stored in your house, in your hot water heater, in your toilet tank. Should disaster hit and you have time, fill up your bathtub. Go to the store. If you can afford it, buy a small inflatable pool. You can fill those up with water. Get the water part first. There are some real nice water storage systems, 55-gallon drums designed to hold water that are even better. That you can drink right out of them if need be. If you've put in good, clean water, it should be changed out about every 90 days. Excuse me. The next thing you'll need is food. Start stockpiling food, food that doesn't need refrigeration. Remember, it won't take much to knock out your ability to refrigerate the electricity. Case in point, look what that ice storm that swept through the mid-Atlantic seaboard down in the northern states. There's 40-some-odd thousand people still without electricity. And that was in a very small area, relatively small geographic area. Imagine this happening all across the nation. So,
and that really is a frightening thing. And so you just have to try to think, you know, what would you do if you lost your refrigeration? What would you do if you've got all this food in your refrigerator and, of course, it's all gone? How would you actually be able to get by at nighttime, especially older people? They have to have a source of light to get up and go to the bathroom and to look after themselves. And most people maybe have a flashlight. Maybe it works and maybe it doesn't. But everybody, I think, should have the emergency facilities. You've actually put together a list of the things that people need, haven't you?
Yes. We've got a general guideline list of things you can think about and how you might be able to put them into use. Like, for instance, a radio, a portable AM/FM shortwave radio with removable batteries is very important. You have to go on the assumption the electricity is not going to work, so your TV, which is the main information pipeline for most people, and information will be very, very important to you as to assessing the threats that are around you, whether an all clear, it's safe for you to go outside, where help might be, and why I say short wave. In your area, the electricity's off. Maybe there's not the broadcast stations in your area do not have backup generators. They may or may not. Short wave travels such long distance that you'll at least be able to pick up information from a distance. And on top of that, you'll get information on what's going on way outside of your area.
And, of course, information, if there were some sort of a cataclysmic event, it would be so important. And you have to learn what the people of Europe did during the disaster of the Second World War. And they really, so many of them, relied upon shortwave to find out what was really going on. And, of course, you know, if you study what FEMA is planning, the Federal Emergency Management Administration, they are actually planning on relocation camps for millions of Americans. And if you want more information on that, why, Chris Ruddy on his website goes into FEMA's plan to spend billions of dollars for these relocation camps and all the things that would have to go with it. Now, what do they know or what do they suspect that you and I don't know? In fact, David, you just called me 2 days ago and told me about something that was happening at the National Observatory very close to where Dick Cheney lives. What was that about?
Well, your listeners, they're slowly letting the proverbial cat out of the bag as to the extent of the threats. And if you read between the lines and connect the dots, you'll understand that they're getting prepared. Under the National Observatory, there's loud rolling booms coming out on occasion. And on this broadcast interview, the neighbors were interviewed and said they had called and asked what was going on. And they were told, under the guise of national security, that they can't be told what's going on under there.
But it was sounding sort of like explosions, somebody like blowing out some sort of a bunker underground. Was that sort of the impression you got?
Oh, that's pretty much what's going on. There's heavy construction going on underneath the National Observatory. That is also the Vice President Dick Cheney's second residence. Why are they building a bunker under the National Observatory outside of Washington for the vice president?
Now, I suppose it's because Dick Cheney is one of the members of the ruling elite who really runs the world, and he's probably much higher up in the hierarchy and the ruling hierarchy than the president himself. But in fact, many people feel that simply George Bush is a front for Dick Cheney and the power elite he represents. Remember, Dick Cheney, after spending his entire career in government, left back in 1992, went to work. He didn't start working at Halliburton. He suddenly is the CEO, the chief executive officer of Halliburton, without ever having worked outside of government before. And there he collects, I don't know, $30 or $40 million in 8 years, and now he's back in government again as the vice president of the United States. He was well rewarded for his services with Halliburton Oil. But anyway, of course, they're building apparently a bunker. And David called me with this story. Apparently, it had been on something on the Osgood file he'd heard. And sure enough, I picked up an article in the newspaper, which I took and which I have available. And the same story is there. They're building a bunker. Now, why are they building bunkers, underground bunkers? They're not building bunkers for the people. They're building them for the ruling elite. What do they know or what do they anticipate that they're not telling us about? What are they preparing to protect the elite from that they're not preparing to take to protect the average American? And that's why, really, I wanted to put this program on. If anybody's going to protect you, it's going to have to be you yourself. And you better start making the preparations now. And there's certain things that you have to have in the way of preparations for medical care. You may find that the medical care system would be so overburdened you wouldn't be able to get care. So how could you look after yourself? And then the other things that David is talking about. So why don't you pick up the story from there, David?
Well, you have to look at your needs. Some people need medication. Get a supply of the medications you're going to need. Just go on the assumption that the infrastructure that supports you is not going to work for a while. If there's, say, an anthrax spray in several large metropolitan areas, everything that comes out of those large metropolitan areas will stop, and everything going in will stop. So eventually, they're going to have to, if that happens, they're going to have to stop everything, the government, and reconnoiter, find out who's a good guy, who's a bad guy. And they can't do it when everybody's scurrying around. So they're going to have to stop. That means the trucks will stop. And there's an old saying that if you got it, a truck brought it. And if you stop and think about it, there no truer words were spoken. This country runs on trucks. When the trucks stop, your supply line is over with. Now, next time you're at your local grocery store, take a look at the store itself. Take a look at some of the items that, say, a certain item is 10 deep and 5 wide. So if they've got 50 of this item on board, usually the coolers and the refrigeration are on the perimeter, but you can usually poke your nose in around the back of the store where they bring the stuff off the loading dock, and you'll notice there is almost nothing back there. What's in that store is what is there. It gets resupplied on a nightly basis aboard a truck. A truck brings that stuff. People restock those shelves at night. So just take a mental picture of what's in that store and think about where the next store is. In other words, say, for about a 2-mile or a mile radius around this large grocery store, that's all there is to supply that area. Then you begin to understand your vulnerabilities and how susceptible you are to this sort of interruption of what brings you your daily substance, your needs. It will change the way you view your preparation, and you'll want to begin to put a few things away, just in case what the doctor and I are talking about come to fruition.
And I think the food is important. What foods do you actually need, and what would you need? And of course, you know, so you need something more than bread. You need something that's nutritious, because, you know, it is at times of crisis that the diseases do spread, and so you need your maximum immunity. And some of the things we talked about in the last hour, you know, you don't want to have a week supply or a month supply. You want to have several months supply, because believe me, if there is a breakdown, none of these things are going to be available. And so you're going to have a supply, and your primary objective is to look after yourself and your family. Now, after that, you can certainly have an obligation to look after your neighbors, but you can't look after your neighbor or anybody else unless you can take care of yourself. And the first thing, the first loyalty you have is to your family, and you're going to find that's true with just about everybody out there. So you have to know and start thinking what sort of foods you need and what sort of nutritious foods you're going to need that will maintain your general health. And, of course, you want to have the water, and you certainly would want to have some Clorox available, too, wouldn't you, David, in case there were other supplies that you might be of water that you might be concerned about their sterility?
Exactly. For your own personal hygiene, disinfecting things. Now, remember, there's no water, or excuse me, electricity, and people that maintain your local water purification plant, they're not going to be all that energetic about going to work. In other words, that may be shut off to you. It may quit. I know if I worked there and these disasters were around threatening my family, I wouldn't be going to work. I would be with my family. So just a gallon of unscented bleach, costs about $1, can really make your life a lot of other resources may open up to you that weren't usable just by using this as a disinfectant.
And, of course, the things that you have to begin thinking about is if water is unavailable, let's imagine you have a well. How are you going to get the water out if the electricity goes off? You know, everybody, of course, should have a generator. But then, of course, you have to have a supply of gasoline to run that generator. And you go down to the gas station, and once they're out of gasoline, are other trucks going to be coming in to refill? And the answer is no. And so these are things that you have to think about. I can remember when we had the great earthquake back in 1989, and the shelves of the stores were just about empty, you know, within a day or two.
And you go to your local service station, the tanks may be full, but without electricity, it doesn't come out of the ground.
Absolutely. And so all of these things are things you have to think about. Nobody likes to think that the unthinkable could happen. But obviously the people in government are planning on something happening, or they would not be building these underground enclaves. And those of you who heard our interview with Harry Martin the other day, talking about the bunkers they have here on the West Coast, the bunkers they have on the East Coast. George Bush has told us that there is a shadow government that is functioning in case the government in Washington, D.C. were destroyed. There are people underground at this very minute ready to take over control. We live in an uncertain world, and of course, behind all of these are various forces, whether it's Al-Qaeda or Saddam Hussein or the CIA or the elite that runs America, are the other spiritual scenarios. I'm convinced Lucifer has a scenario. I'm sure God has a scenario. And of course, God sometimes would use evil to punish a nation that's turned against him. And so there might be things that you would think would be unthinkable. But then, of course, if you read the Bible, you'll find that time and time and time again, God has destroyed countries that have turned against him. Is there anybody in the listening audience that does not believe that America today is a pagan, godless nation? I mean, everybody says God bless America, but I would simply ask, why should God bless America? And if God has withdrawn his protection, why it behooves us to begin to realize that maybe the utopian existence we've had here is going to cease to exist. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you agree or disagree, give us a call. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And now, David, of course, what are some of the other things you have on this checklist? And you've actually put this checklist together, and you'll send that free of charge to people if they would like to get it. Is there a telephone number where they can get that list for preparation?
Yes, you can call us at 1-800-453-2202.
That's
1-800-453-2202, yes.
2202, and you can get a free copy of this list of preparation, the things that you would want to think about. And most of us wouldn't even think of a lot of these things. After all, it's Christmas season, and, we don't want to think about it. But remember, the president is talking about going to war as soon as he possibly can. And he said, if Saddam Hussein doesn't turn over this list on the 7th or 8th of December when he's supposed to, that gives us justification for going to war. If we can't come up with any other reason for going to war, how many of you out there in the listening audience would think that we wouldn't shoot down one of our own planes and blame it on Saddam Hussein to justify going to war? Certainly, if you've ever read Operation Northwood, you know that was exactly the plan. We were going to blow up some of our own planes or blow up some of our own ships or blow up apparently a passenger plane that was flying over Cuba. Everybody would believe it was full of students, and we'd blow up the plane after putting out a mayday, and then, of course, we would justify going to war. And, of course, it was partly because the President Kennedy wouldn't go along with Operation Northwood that the CIA decided to do him in, and that's all covered in that wonderful book, Regicide, which was based upon the information that was put forward by Robert Crowley, who was a deputy assistant director of covert operations for the CIA, who admitted in his papers that he gave to Mr. Douglas, who wrote the book, that he was intimately involved in the decision to assassinate President Kennedy, and largely because of Operation Northwood, because Kennedy wouldn't go along with blowing up a couple of our planes or boats so we could go to war with Cuba. Unfortunately, there are people who will do things like that, and, if it should happen before, the first of the year, or maybe right after the first of the year, there's no question we're going to war. And I don't see, David, why more people aren't concerned. When you go to war, everything changes, society changes. And, of course, at that point, certainly there possibly could be retaliation right here in the United States. In fact, that's what Saddam Hussein is talking about, is retaliating against America. If we attack him, he's going to attack us. And why should we be surprised if he did? And, of course, how would we possibly justify any outrage? We're going to send our troops in to kill his people. What would be wrong if he sent people in his people in to kill ours? And I don't like to see anybody get killed. And I think war is horrible, and we should, we certainly shouldn't be going into this war. But, the thing that bothers me is so few Americans are concerned about the the possibility that anything could ever happen here. It's almost like, well, it was like it was in Germany before the Second World War. People believed they could never see another cataclysmic event, another major war in Germany as they'd just gotten through a generation previously. David, why aren't more people concerned?
I ask myself that question every day. Is the problem too overwhelming for most people to put it in its proper perspective? Is do they have that much faith in the government? Have they become that jaded and, quote, lazy, unquote? But right now, since we're right on that point, when that day comes, and they said the authorities say there's a 100% chance of that day coming, 100%, that what we're talking about tonight, getting prepared, if the resources to prepare yourself will not be available to you. They will be turned off almost immediately, or somebody else that's a little faster than you will scoop them up.
Now, what should people do medically, do you think? What should they do to prepare themselves medically for the possibility of a biological attack, or even for looking after themselves medically if the unthinkable should happen?
Well, medically, first off, to put it kind of crudely, look at your body. Do you have any cuts? Gum diseases. The mouth would be a fantastic place for a biological to enter your body. If you need any dental work done, you need to get it done now so it has time to heal and close up that opening. That is just an opportunistic spot for infection. That's the first thing. Now, I'm seriously considering myself. I've had one eye done with LASIK surgery, and it worked out really well. And I'm thinking about having the other one done. I could probably go around without having to have glasses. And I may have it done just real quickly, like after the first of the year, so I get healed up, and LASIK surgery doesn't take long. But then I'm pretty much functional. I'm middle aged now, and I need glasses, but I can function without glasses. And that makes me just a little bit more usable, shall we say, to my family.
All right. Well, one of the things I think of, they keep talking about a biological attack. I don't know if it'll ever come, but if it did come, how would you protect yourself? Now, certainly no antibiotics at all that are effective for smallpox, and I think the smallpox scare is a created one. I don't really believe there's any smallpox out there. After all, were they lying before when they said there was no danger of smallpox? Are they lying now when they say there is a danger of smallpox? And are they using it to frighten us to death so that we'll be ready to accept almost anything? In fact, I was thinking of Jim Jones. You know, Jim Jones would have the people in the in this little group that he had down in Guyana, the People's Temple, and he would have them go through a drill every so often where they'd all get together and they'd drink the Kool-Aid, and nothing ever happened. But, of course, they were told that they were to do that, so they could all kill themselves because the enemy was coming, and they drank the Kool-Aid, nothing happened. And right now they're telling us, just go get the shot, the vaccination, nothing's going to happen. Maybe nothing's going to happen. And then what about the next vaccination and the next vaccination? And, of course, one time when Jim Jones told them to drink the Kool-Aid, why, it was poison. And they, almost everybody in People's Temple, they all died. And we're being prepared for something. They're manipulating us with a smallpox threat. But imagine there were anthrax, and this is certainly a possibility. They know how to create the anthrax and aerosolize it and get it very small and take the charge out. But there are things that will protect you against pulmonary anthrax, and that's antibiotics. And, David, don't you think everybody ought to at least try to have a good supply of antibiotics on hand?
If you can get your medical physician to prescribe to you a supply of antibiotics, yes, that would be a fantastic. A lot of doctors won't. You're going to have to be very convincing in your plea to the doctor.
And the other thing is you have to know that you can't use both penicillin and tetracycline together, or doxycycline, because they will tend to neutralize. So you can use one or the other. And, of course, doxycycline is the drug of choice as far as anthrax, pulmonary anthrax is concerned. And then their monkey experiments, why I think all but, I think 8 out of the 10 monkeys that were given doxycycline survived, about the same with the Cipro. So, you know, I think doxycycline is equally good to Cipro. We're going to be back here in just a moment with David Sipley, and we'll welcome your calls here at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and certainly if you believe, as I do, that we face very real problems today, if you believe, as I do, that the utopian world we've lived in is on the brink of destruction, that we are entering into some very, very difficult times for America. And remember, I've been following this for 40 years, and but I've never had the feeling of urgency that I have now. I believe this whole war with Saddam Hussein is contrived, but it's being contrived for a reason, and I'm not sure what that reason is. Is it going to be to justify some terrible things happening here? Is this going to bring God's judgment on America? I know that there are many people. I remember Dmitry Dutman, who claimed some amazing experiences with God. He always predicted a nuclear attack on America. David Wilkerson had written extensively about this. My friend Bill Sneplin had talked about how he was told in the early 80s that by Manly Palmer Hall that there would be first Gulf War in the 1990s and then a second Gulf War in the year 2002, and that as a result of that, a byproduct, there would be a biological and then a nuclear attack on America. Is he telling the truth? Was Manly Palmer Hall telling him the truth? Is it possible that that unthinkable should happen? Well, all I can say is we should be prepared with a proviso that if it doesn't happen, why we should be thankful, and if it did happen, why at least some people would be prepared to survive and carry on the tradition and hopefully reclaim the freedom that once made America the envy of the entire world. So our plea to you is, if you believe that there's a problem and you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family, and as we talk about the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and give serious consideration to becoming a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day, week in and week out. Week in and week out, and 5 hours on radio, 5 hours on internet, 3 hours on satellite, 2 hours on shortwave. But what a unique opportunity to reach out across the world with the information you're not going to get from the establishment communicasters, the ones you always hear quoted on ABC, CBS, and NBC. Oliver North, G. Gordon Liddy, Rush Limbaugh, some of the finest communicasters that money can buy. Fortunately, we've never been made an offer we couldn't refuse, and so we still are able to give you the truth, the news behind the news, the story behind the story. So we hope many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family. Remember our number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Remember our website? It's www.radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. And we'll be back in just a moment with David Sibley. We'll welcome your calls at 888-24-LIBERTY or across America and here in the Central Coast, 464-8295. Well, David Sibley is our guest this evening. David, what sort of food should people think about getting if they're going to have maybe consider a month to 6 weeks without a ready supply of food? What sort of things would they want to have on hand?
Well, non-perishable foods, foods that do not need refrigeration. You could lose the electricity for a long time, and that is a primary concern. Foods that that are of your daily regimen, stuff that your body's used to. You're going to be stressed when things aren't going real well. Now, a major change in a diet, in other words, if you went from a very well-balanced 3 squares a day, to all of a sudden, eating cold foods that are unprepared or not of what you're used to, your system may revolt. And you don't, at this period of time, you want to keep that as normal as you can, because with a little bit of evaporation, you can keep that real normal. In other words, what you're used to. Little subtle things. Most people have a barbecue on the back porch, a propane fire barbecue. Fill that bottle up and see if you can come up with another one. That may be your only source of cooking. Now you can prepare hot meals. We have units that are designed to feed families under certain situations and provide all the balanced nutrients and calories, and they're just normal foods that you buy in the store. They've just been packaged and dehydrated for just such emergencies.
And of course, I remember when we had the earthquake here, why we had cans of Sterno and we could actually cook on that. Certainly most people, many people have the Coleman stoves that you take when you're going camping, but you need to have some Coleman fuel for something of that sort. Certainly the outdoor barbecue that David's talking about. All of these things are available in most people's homes, but of course you have to think ahead, because it doesn't do any good to have a Coleman stove and of course not have any fuel for it. Certainly having cans of Sterno, having sources of light, lanterns, candles, you know, things like that. Certainly you want to have flashlight, but you can't keep a flashlight on all the time. And so lanterns or even the old kerosene lamps are certainly an excellent way to go. They provide a tremendous amount of light, and as long as you're careful with them, why, they work very efficiently.
Yes, the old hurricane lamps. They're easy, they're foolproof to a great extent. You just have to handle them properly. Now with today's technology, there are some great solar rechargeable flashlights, batteries. That's another thing when I mentioned the radios. Make sure you have plenty of batteries. And these rechargeable NiCad batteries with a little solar battery charger, which they're available, the sun will come up, even in a disaster. The sun will come up and be up there for about a day, and you can recharge these batteries, so you're good to go at night. So you've got a God-given renewable energy source. You just have to be prepared. And like I've said earlier, that if you plan on getting these things, amassing these, after something happens, it won't happen.
And, of course, you know, when there's a chaotic situation, there's really a breakdown of all law and order. Don't expect you're going to be able to call the police and, you know, they're going to answer your 911 call. It just isn't going to happen. I remember when the lights would go out, the electricity would go off in New York City, and there was chaos. There was looting, people, almost people like are transformed by the darkness into an evil thing. You're going to have to be prepared to protect yourself and protect your family on a basis, if there's shortages of food, first of all, you've got to be able to protect yourself. You certainly want to help others as much as you can, but there would be people out there who would simply take everything you have so that you would be unable to look after yourself or anyone else. And of course, so you need to think about all of these things ahead of time. Don't wait until something happens. We're talking about going to war. Of course, we remember the war in Vietnam, but that didn't affect us at home. No, it didn't affect us at home. But then, of course, nobody had ever suggested that there were going to be terrorist cells operating in the United States, Vietnamese terrorist cells. And yet we have, since 1966, been bringing in radical Muslim extremists into this country, and we went from 50,000 Muslims to 7 million Muslims. That's the figure that the Muslims use at the present time. And of that component, about 1.6 million of them go to the mosques, and most of those mosques are preaching Islamic Jihad here in America. So we have created a monster within this nation, and of course there is very much of a tendency for a brotherhood. And of course, when we are killing Muslims overseas, if it should come to that, and I fear that it will, as far as our attack on Iraq, why, of course, should we be surprised if there is retaliation here at the United States? I don't think we should be, and I think we should plan on it and hope and pray it doesn't occur. But we would be foolish not to prepare, and yet, of course, nothing is being done to prepare. Nobody's warning the American people to prepare. We're just being told, well, don't you worry, FEMA's going to be there to look after you. But if there are a dozen sites across America, how many FEMA teams do we have? How many emergency hospitals do we have for civilian defense? We have none. They've closed every one of them down. David, do you have a website at all for our listeners to go to?
Yes, you can go to www.readyreservefoodsinc.com, and you'll get an idea of what we're all about.
All right, fine. Do you have that that list, that preparatory list up there?
The list is available. We've got the new printing in, and if you call us, we'll be glad to send you one. You'll get a catalog along with that, but there is no obligation to buy anything. It's the...
Just go ahead, and what's that telephone number again?
800-453-2202.
All right, and of course, David's put together a list of the things that you would want to think about having on hand. And, of course, many of the things you might even have thought of. But go through that checklist. Don't put this off. Let's hope and pray that nothing does happen. But, of course, it's far better to make the preparations and find it isn't needed than to need it and not having made the preparations. So, you know, I think that this is not a subject that's very popular. But I was encouraged the other day talking to a woman who listened to our program, and she told me that they were making preparations in their home, and they had a 3 weeks food supply. And if we could only reach a couple of families out there to get them thinking and making the preparations for their family. And hopefully other people will begin getting the idea, getting the thought of it. People really cannot, in their own minds, think clearly of the implications of America going to war. I mean, you know, it's something, well, it's just, well, we'll watch it on television. Well, you may not only be able to watch it on television, you may have the opportunity to watch in your own communities the effect of that. Now, hopefully here where I live, we do not have a large Muslim contingent. But there are certain parts of the country where there is a very large Muslim contingent. In fact, it's said that there are more Iranians living in Los Angeles than there are in any other city outside of Tehran in Iran. And, of course, most Iranians are wonderful people. But some of them are of this radical Islamic jihad belief. And, of course, we know that they're here. If you doubt that they're here and that they've been preparing for many years, a wonderful book written in 1993. It's called Attack on America. It's written by a man named Yosef Badansky, who is the director of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare. What's so interesting about the book is somebody has bought up all the copies, so that it's almost impossible to get. I had to get my copy as a paperback book out of London. It cost me $25, but I wanted to get it because, of course, in that book, it told about how during the early 1980s, from about 82 to 85 or 86, why Iran had training camps. And you know what they were training? Why they were training Islamic terrorists to hijack American planes and crash them into our buildings. And they had 747s and 707s. Now, they didn't actually crash them into buildings, but they were teaching them all the things that they would do, how they would take over the plane, and then how they would commandeer it so that they could have the suicide attacks. Now, if they were planning that in the early 80s, why is it Condoleezza Rice would go before national television and say, why, who would have ever thought that these people would hijack our planes and crash them into our buildings? Well, that's why, of course, I believe all the copies of that book have been bought up. But in that book, written in 1993, Yosef Badansky said that there were already these Islamic terrorist cells here in the United States. They were under Iranian and Syrian control, not under Iraqi control. But they, of course, were waiting for the word to be given. And those people have been here waiting for, well, many of them, 15 years now, waiting for the word to be given. So don't sit back and say it couldn't happen here. What you're seeing is long-term planning going all the way back, of course, to when we changed our immigration laws in 65 to change this from a Christian society into a multicultural society for times such as this. Because I believe there is long-range planning. The people who direct this know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. And I believe that there will one day be chaos on our streets. either because of the wicked people work behind the scenes, or perhaps God bringing his judgment upon America. Well, David, what are some of the other things that you think people ought to be doing at the present time?
Oh, blankets, toilet paper. What a luxury toilet paper would be. We've all run out of toilet paper, and it's nice to get resupplied. If you live in certain parts of the country where you've got a store of heating oil, get that heating oil full, because your tank's full. Candles. Have a few candles around. When I say a few, we make a very good candle, an emergency candle that will not wilt over and set the house on fire. And they're very inexpensive, and they'll burn for 50-plus hours. Matches, ways to start fire, warm clothes that you can wear outside. Everybody's got, if you live in cold climate, but warm clothes that you can wear and lounge around the house, so you're not lumbering around in big, heavy outdoor clothes, so you can basically live more comfortably inside your house. Glasses, if like myself, I talked earlier about the surgery on my eye, I've got several pair of backup glasses. I mean, at the moment, if I were to lose my glasses or not be able to get new ones, I would be pretty ineffective. We did this, my family, when we lived up in Oregon. And now I'm going to make a little suggestion. You want an idea of what it's like? Have the listeners, without endangering themselves, on a Friday evening when everybody gets home, turn the electricity off to the house. And maybe even turn the water off. Okay, that shouldn't be so bad. And begin to watch what happens, how your life changes very rapidly. First time somebody opens the refrigerator, hey, this stuff's getting warm. What are we going to do? And it goes on. And you can't turn the TV on. Everything changes in your life. And you'll begin to get an idea of the things you will need by doing so. But please, don't do it to where it endangers you if you try to take this little test.
And of course, the things you could even certainly have a few milk bottles full of ice, in the freezer, and so that if you did lose your electricity, you would have that ice in there to continue keeping the food chilled, at least, so that you wouldn't lose it too soon. Then you'd have to start using it up very quickly. But ordinarily, there's nothing in there. Of course, the things that are frozen tend to keep them cold, but it's always nice to have some additional ice as well.
Oh, yes. If you want to call it funny part, was my children, they were, 4 and 9 at the time, or 8, and how they began to really appreciate or at least understand the impact of what was going on. Like, their life had changed. My wife and I got kind of a kick out of it, but it was just a drill. And we used some of the things, we put in motion some of our preparedness plans, and we found some holes in some of them and altered our tactics. So it's a good place to start doing something like that.
And of course, hope and pray it never happens, but be prepared in case it does. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. And one of the things, of course, we were talking earlier with Bill Sardi about, the things that you could do to boost your immunity. But of course, you want to have multivitamins on hand. You want to have some of the essential oils. You want to have certainly the zinc and selenium and vitamin C and vitamin E that boost your immunity. And if you want to think about taking the garlic, you want to have a supply of that on hand. Because believe me, we're so dependent upon ready replenishing of our supplies. We cannot imagine what it would be like if suddenly the supplies were cut off for a week, a month, for several months. And of course, if any of you have not seen the film Outbreak, I suggest you go down to Blockbuster and get it. It's a story of an epidemic that was to hit, and it hit in a town, as I remember, up in Oregon. And of course, how do you handle an outbreak? Well, the consultant on that was a man named Don Francis. And if he worked for the CDC, and of course he had left the CDC, In fact, Dustin Hoffman in that movie plays the part of Don Francis, and Don was always sort of a renegade. He didn't go along with the official party line on a lot of things, and that was just exactly what Don Francis was like. If you read my book, AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, why we talk quite a bit about Francis in that, but the consultant for the movie Outbreak was Don Francis, so this is how an epidemic would be handled. And, of course, the first thing, if there was an outbreak in your community, why, the military would come in and cordon off your area and shoot anybody who tried to get outside. And nothing would come in and nothing would go out until either the people had survived the epidemic or they died from it. That's the way you handled an epidemic of that sort. That's the way you handled the outbreaks of Ebola in Africa. We simply locked off the areas, surrounded them, and people either lived or died. But no one would leave that area if you isolated it. We do that with all diseases, but AIDS, we allow that to spread far and wide because that's being used for political purposes. But on other infectious diseases, this is how they're handled and this is how they're stopped. So what would happen if it was in your community and your area was cordoned off? What would you do? How would you survive? And you're going to have to think about all of these things as far as yourself is concerned. And you make the preparations now. I know we have some face masks. You can certainly get those. And I have a supply of those on hand. Of course, I had them from when I was a doctor, but I think it's a good thing to have. And we've just sort of kept those supplies available so that at least we would have the face masks. You go back to the time of the great influenza epidemic in 1918, and you look at the pictures at that time. What the most unusual thing? Everybody's wearing a face mask. And, of course, nobody went out at all. There were no meetings. There were no people didn't go to theaters. They didn't go to church. You avoided others at all time. And, of course, the only people on the streets were the ones who were picking up the bodies and putting them to carts and taking them to graveyards. And they had pictures of Santa Cruz, where I live at that time. And that's exactly what was happening as they were taking the bodies to the cemetery to die. And more people died in that epidemic, the Spanish flu epidemic in 1918, and then died in the First World War. And, of course, the most amazing thing is the army has just sent people up to Alaska to dig up the bodies to get more of the virus. Why would they want to do something like that? What would happen if it got loose? Or what do they know that we don't know about what the future holds? Well, David, you know, of course, as we talk about the unthinkable, and I think a lot of people out there are sitting back and they don't want to hear this sort of thing. But my feeling is if we care about others, we're going to tell them whether they want to hear or not. It's sort of like the minister who tells people that they're going to go to eternal damnation if they don't have a personal relationship with the Lord. And people don't like to hear the story. But the minister is doing what he's supposed to do, and I really believe that you and I are doing what we're supposed to do when we're warning people to begin to prepare. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, that goes without saying. It's a little effort now on people's part can literally mean the difference between life and death. And when that day comes, and they say there's 100% chance of that day coming, you will not have the resources to swing into action. And you were mentioning earlier about vitamins and essential oils. Remember, if this is a protracted hit, in other words, this lasts a while, people will begin to get sick around you. Maybe not around you directly. So disease will rise very rapidly. Sanitation will begin to really get compromised. And myself, I mean, when was the last time any of us were exposed to real harsh diseases? So you have to make these preparations and plan for things not going real well and people being sick around you. And the healthier you are, the more tuned up your immune system is, the cleaner you're living, the more well-fed you are, the better your chance of survival.
I think that's absolutely right. Water, food. Food is absolutely essential to keep your immunity up. And, of course, you need the vitamins, you need the minerals, and then you need the nutrition. Start thinking right now about the things that you need. And, of course, it's better to have the things that you're used to will keep your nutrition up. And, of course, then you need the vitamins to supplement it because you're not going to have the fresh lettuce and the fresh tomatoes and all the things you're getting at the market. And then, of course, how would you trade things? What would you have to barter if we were ever put into that position where people would begin to feel that perhaps the money was not as valuable or it lost its value? So you need things to barter as well, so you obtain things from other people. And this is what happens in societies as they begin to break down. Now, hope and pray it doesn't occur. But, of course, remember what our leaders have said. It's not a matter of if there's going to be attack. It is not a matter of if there's going to be attack, but when that attack is coming. And I want you to remember that as you contemplate what we've been talking about this evening. And, again, that number, if you'd like to get that list for preparation, is 1-800-453-2202. That's 1-800-453-2202. At least have the list, get it, look at it, and then think, well, what should I be doing? Is this really worthwhile making preparations? I hope you'll agree with me that it is. David, we're just about out of time. What thoughts would you like to leave with our listeners tonight?
Yeah, you just sparked something. Is we all get our money out of ATMs and banks. They will be closed. It wouldn't hurt to have some cash laying around, because we'll go from a digital... Gee whiz society where you go down to the ATM and you slash your card through and get some cash, or you go to the market, that'll quit. Cash will be king. So if you can afford and have some money laying around, hid away in the house for just this reason.
And, you know, of course, they tell us that, if there was ever a nuclear attack in space, a nuclear explosion, it would knock out all of the computers. If it knocked out all of the computers that were running at the time, why, of course, your card, your Visa, your MasterCard, none of these things would work. You wouldn't be able to buy things at the stores with your credit card. We've become so dependent upon the cashless society. But what happens if suddenly it weren't available?
Well, that's very true. This wonderful system that we have, this just-in-time system of be it food, water, money, is really wonderful, but it is so vulnerable. And these terrorists have studied this to the nth degree, and they know where its weaknesses are. And they can literally take you and I out of the supply chain very quickly.
Amen to that. Well, I hope many of you out there do get our newsletter, and I think in your latest newsletter we will tell you about an article that appeared on the Asia Times internet site for 2 hours. And then it was suddenly taken down. Somebody took this a letter down. I think that you'll be very interested reading it. It's included in our latest newsletter that just went out. If you don't already subscribe, if you'd like a free copy of the November newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Why did they take the Asia Times newsletter down? Well, there may be several reasons, but you'll know why I think it was taken down. But it had some other shocking information in it. David, thank you so much for being with us tonight. We'll be talking in the near future.
Thank you for having me. Good night, everybody.
Bye-bye. And this is Dr. Stan. And this is the time we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. And we ask you to pray for revival. Because, of course, if America doesn't turn back to God, God is certainly going to turn his back on America forever. And then we ask you, of course, to pray for our, my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday, when we'll be back with you once again, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
here, and David's going to get some stuff. All of a sudden it came.
Where's something? Coming up before?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Fine.
So David's going to get something to send it up.
Okay, fine. Thanks.
Okay. Have you anything? No, we don't have to.
You probably need to open up that line where it drains out here.